The skin horse had lived longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat was bald in patches and showed the seams underneath, and most of the hairs in his tail had been pulled out to string bead necklaces. He was wise, for he had seen a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to boast and swagger and by, break their mainsprings and pass away. And he knew that they were only toys and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange and wonderful, and only those playthings that are old and wise and experienced like the skin horse understand all about it. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you're made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really, really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" asked the rabbit. "Sometimes," said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt."
"Does it happen all at once, like being wound up?" he asked. "Or bit by bit?"
"No, it doesn't happen all at once," said the skin horse. "You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't happen often for people who break easily or have sharp edges or who have to be very carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off and your eyes drop out and you get loose in your joints and are very shabby. But these things don't matter at all. Because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand." No. Do you remember that? The Velveteen Rabbit. Today we're going to remember and celebrate our younger selves, our funny, goofy, resilient, wild, quiet, sweet, playful, real selves. And we are also going to share our stories. This is how we honor who we are, where we've been, what we've learned, how we are becoming all the time, and where we're from. I love the writings of Sandra Cisneros. My favorites are The House on Mango Street and Woman Hollering Creek. She writes these tiny mini short stories painted with her childhood vivid voice and vision intact. She resonates with me, perhaps because I find my own story in hers. Here's one. "We didn't always live on Mango Street. Before that, we lived in Loomis on the third floor. And before that, we lived on Keeler. Before Keeler, it was Paulina. And before that, I can't remember. But what I do remember most is moving a lot." Except Sandra says that each time they moved, it seemed there'd be one more of them. In my case, each time we moved, there would be one less of us. Sandra's family moves into the house on Mango Street, far away on the other side of town. She imagines that it will be white, like the houses she sees on TV, with real stairs, a great big yard, the house her father describes when he's holding the lucky lottery ticket, the house her mother describes when she's telling her her bedtime stories. But she writes, "The house on Mango Street is not the house I expected at all. It's small and it's red with tight steps in front and windows so small you would think they were holding their breath. Bricks are crumbling in places and the front door is so swollen you have to push hard to get in. There is no front yard. Only four little elms that the city planted by the curb. Once, when we were living on Loomis, a nun from my school passed by and saw me playing out front. 'Where do you live?' she asked. 'There,' I said, pointing to the third floor. 'You live there?' 'There.' I had to look where she pointed. There, the third floor. There, the paint peeling. There, the wooden bars pop a hand nail on the window so we wouldn't fall out. 'You live there?' The way she said it made me feel like nothing. There, I did live there. I nodded. I knew then that I'd have to have a great big house, a real house, one I could point to. But this isn't it. The house on Mango Street isn't it. 'For the time being,' Mama says. 'Temporary,' says Papa. 'But I know how those things go.' Alicia says, 'Like it or not, you are Mango Street, and one day you'll come back.' What do you remember of your neighborhood, of your house, or the many houses that you've lived in? Are you familiar with the poem, Where I'm From, by George Ella Lyon? She writes, 'I'm from clothespins, from Clorox and carbon tetrachloride. I am from the dirt under the back porch, black, glistening, it tasted like beets. I am from the forsythia bush, the Dutch elm, whose long gone limbs I remember as if they were my own. I am from fudge and eyeglasses, from Imogeny and a LaFaire. I'm from the know-it-alls and the pass-it-ons, from perk up and pipe down. I'm from the he restoreth my soul with a cotton ball lamb and 10 verses I can say by myself. I'm from Artemis and Billy's branch, fried corn and strong coffee, from the finger my grandfather lost to the auger, the eye my father shut to keep his sight. Under my bed was a dress box, spilling old pictures, a sift of lost faces to drift beneath my dreams. I am from those moments, snapped before I budded, leaf fall from the family tree.' How would you write the Where I'm From poem? What people, what trees, books, dreams, songs, neighborhoods, wars, roads and travels, sounds gave voice to your spirit, gave refuge to your soul and your body, and made you feel seen and real? Would you take a moment to think about that? And would you turn to your neighbor for just one moment and share, how did you become real? Thank you. I am so glad that you are finding the time to share your stories. Here's another story from Sandra Cisneros. It's called My Name. She writes, "In English, my name means hope. In Spanish,
It means too many letters. It means sadness, and it means waiting. It is like the number 9, a muddy color. It is the Mexican records my father plays on Sunday mornings while he is shaving, songs that sound like sobbing. It was my great-grandmother's name, and now it is mine. My great-grandmother. I would have liked to have known her. They say she was a wild horse of a woman, so wild she wouldn't marry. I wonder if she made the best with what she got, or was she sorry because she couldn't be all the things she wanted to be? Esperanza. Esperanza. I have inherited her name, but I don't want to inherit her place by the window. At school, they say my name funny, as if the syllables were made out of tin and hurt the roof of your mouth. But in Spanish, my name is made out of a softer something. I would like to baptize myself under a new name, a name more like the real me, the one nobody sees. Were you named after someone? I was named after both my grandmothers. Do you have a nickname? I've never told this in public. Do you remember Catwoman? Yeah. Well, they teased me and they said that my name in Spanish was Gatúbela. That was Catwoman. If you could choose a new name, what would it be and why? How would that show to the world the real you? Anybody care to share? Yes.
I like my name.
You like your name. All right. I love my name. Yes.
I didn't like my name, but now I do.
Aww. Yes.
I was named after my grandmother, LaVonda. I didn't like it growing up, but then I heard people say, oh, that's a beautiful name, and I started, oh, okay, now I started liking it.
We grow to like our names sometimes. Yeah. Yes.
I never understood how Robert became Bob.
We learn to adapt to our own names. Leah.
My grandfather and several other relatives couldn't tell my sister and me apart, so they would just say either Thelia or Twinsy.
It's not easy when you're a twin and you're named Leah and Thea. Beautiful. Yes.
Well, Sheila's rather rare, so if I hear the name being called somewhere, I usually seek out that person, and we're like two less.
Aww. Yeah, Sheila, beautiful name. Yes.
I've always liked my name, but it's always the nicknames people gave me I didn't like.
You didn't like the nicknames, and you're not sharing those with us? Baby Boo?
Baby Ruth.
That's sweet. It's not. Karen.
My maiden name was Kelly, so I was Karen Kelly. And my nickname was either Kelly or Clickhead.
Oh, Clickhead. Anyone else? Yes.
I replaced my older brother's job a while ago. And then while everybody came to meet me, they said, oh, you're Allie's brother.
Allie's brother, not calling you by your name. Oh, somebody's brother, somebody's husband. So sorry. Yes.
Actually, my real name, I go by Lori, but my real name is Lorraine.
Lorraine.
I do like a lot, but I just kind of fall into that Lori. But Lorraine is my real name.
Thank you. Lori, Lorraine. Anyone else?
Yes, Beth.
Well, my parents named me Mary Beth.
Mary Beth.
And I was called MB for many years.
MB.
And then I decided in my 30s that I wanted to be called just Beth, so my family called me just Beth.
Oh.
Family, there were a lot of Mary Elizabeths, and I wish they had named me that.
Mary Elizabeth, beautiful. Mary Beth, yes.
I have no clue why my parents named me Daryl. If there's no Daryl anywhere in the family at all, that's so. And the founder is.
Yeah, thank you.
I was also known as DA.
DA, all right. I call him now the Rocket Man because I saw his picture wearing the helmet like an astronaut. Yes, Donnie.
I'm Donetta Camille, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
Donetta Camille, how beautiful. Yes.
My parents did a crazy thing. There were three of us, Dave, Diane, and Don Sue, all DSD.
Yes.
Right around third grade, everybody started calling me BJ, and I absolutely hated it.
Oh.
Because they had an evil reason for calling.
Oh, I'm so sorry for that. Welcome, visitors. Yes, Terry.
Well, this isn't really about my name, it's about my mother's name.
Your mom's name?
We called her Ezra, and that one stuck, and she was known as Ez for the rest of her life.
Oh, wow, Ezra.
All her friends knew her as Ez, and she signed all of her letters Ez.
That
is just a story about don't ever say something to a teenager.
You may just get it, right? Anyone else? I saw another hand. Yes, Stephanie. Snuffy.
Because there was a cartoon character. Very, you have to be pretty old to remember Barney Google and Snuffy. But I can still tell any place in the world if somebody calls me Snuffy. I know they knew me before I left high school.
Oh. Sweet. Yes.
Well, everybody knows Kirk, but that's my middle name.
My
first name is Stanford. And my brother's name is Leland because my father thought Leland Stanford was a great guy, and I said he was a robber baron.
That's a great story. That's a Evelyn.
When I was a kid, I was known as Pete the Pimp because I asked so many questions.
Aww. We're glad you're asking questions. That's such a you thing to do. Anyone else? Resiliency. Resiliency is defined as the capacity to recover quickly from difficulties. Toughness, the ability to spring back into shape. Elasticity. Isn't it amazing that we can go through so much in our lives and yet have this capacity to recover, to transform ourselves, to stretch our imaginations and our spirits and spring back into a new shape? I remember the first time I read A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, where the tree of heaven grows amidst the tenement houses. I had left my native Chile where I played under eucalyptus trees, pepper trees, eating ripe apricots right from the branch. Now I lived in the Bronx, amidst the brick and cement rocked by the number 4 train every 15 minutes. I didn't fit in. I was bullied at school. I felt that I didn't belong. I walked around feeling like as if I had swallowed a stone. walked around feeling the heaviness of my heart flooding with nostalgia for another time, another space. But there was this one little oak tree growing through a crack in the cement, and I decided that was me. Sandra Cisneros writes about four skinny trees. She says, "They are the only ones who understand me. I am the only one who understands them. Four skinny trees with skinny necks and pointy elbows, just like mine. Four who do not belong here, but are here. Four raggedy excuses planted by the city. From our room, I can hear them. My sister Nenny says, oh, whatever. She sleeps and she doesn't appreciate these things. Their strength is secret. They send ferocious roots beneath the ground. They grow up and they grow down and grab the earth between their hairy toes and bite the sky with violent teeth and never quit their anger. This is how they keep. Let one forget his reason for being, they'll all drop like tulips in a glass, each with their arms around the other. Keep. Keep. Keep, the trees say when I'm asleep. They teach me. When I am too sad and too skinny to keep keeping, when I'm a tiny thing against so many bricks, then it is I that looks at the trees when there is nothing left to look at on this street. Four who grew despite the concrete. Four who reach and do not forget to reach. Four whose only reason is to be and be." Our stories, our friendships, our dreams, our values, and our hopes have shaped who we are, how we see ourselves and the world around us, how we make meaning of all our experiences. It is good to remember, to reflect on how home, school, sports, music, nature, and church have shaped our lives. Our Unitarian Universalist faith has deep roots in the Transcendentalist movement of the early 19th century. Emerson, Thoreau, Alcott, to name a few, they believe that people can have direct experiences and knowledge of the divine, of the sacred, without any intermediaries. They also believe that children were more closely connected to the divine. They believe that our vision as children was fuller and clearer. We change so much, and yet it seems sometimes that so much remains the same, doesn't it? As I contemplated your beautiful photographs, I was moved to tears by the light in your eyes, the warmth of your smile, faces full of wonder, the wonder years. So much of our childhood is still present today in the way we speak, how we write, our love of poetry, of solitude, the need to create art, to plant a garden, to dance, to sing, to play drums, to tell stories. Just for a moment, let us savor the memories of our younger, resilient selves as alchemists with the capacity to transform time and space, transform the pain of loneliness, sadness, awkwardness, the pain of having parents perhaps without the necessary skills to guide us or care for us, the pain of not belonging or being bullied, and the pain of feeling invisible. all that pain transformed into magical moments of velveteen rabbits, of imaginary friends, of glorious mud pies and entire symphonies composed on our mom's pots and pans. Let us remember. Let us honor our younger selves, our courage and creativity, and the marvel of our capacity to love deeply and be loved. As we grow to appreciate our older selves, we as a community are engaging in conversations about aging to saging to honor the many gifts of becoming an elder. Playful, curious, passionate, joyful, longing to connect, to be seen, to be heard, to be loved. As we let go of the dread of aging, we become aware that now is the time for deep work, for spiritual development, for soul making, and for sharing our wisdom with others, especially the children in our community. Beloveds, life has offered us plenty of practice in the art of living. For all that is our life, for the way we were, and for all that we are becoming, let us give praise and thanks. Amen, and blessed be.